The Five Leadership Questions podcast is brought to you by Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. Southeastern desires to equip pastors, missionaries, theologians, scholars, and other believers to obey the commands of Jesus to make disciples anywhere and everywhere God calls them to go. Attend preview days at Southeastern Seminary to see firsthand how God is training up students to serve all over the world as pastors, ministry leaders, missionaries, teachers, and more. Preview days include opportunities to meet our world-class faculty members during an informal panel discussion as well as a faculty dinner. You will also have the opportunity to sit in on classes, tour the campus, and get answers to all your questions. Preview days cost $20 per person, and the next one will be September 29th, 2016. Visit sebts.edu/5LQ to learn more. Again, that's sebts.edu/5LQ. Now, enjoy the podcast.
Welcome to the Five Leadership Questions podcast. I'm your host, Barnabas Piper, here with Todd Adkins.
What?
Today, we are sitting down with Trevin Wax, who is a co-worker of ours here at Lifeway. Trevin, welcome to the podcast.
Glad to be back with you guys.
Yeah, Trevin was on a few months ago, and we talked through our standard five leadership questions with him then. Today, though, we are going to be talking about something that Trevin was doing diligently before he came to Lifeway and has continued to do since then and has helped other people start doing. In fact, that's one of the things, that's one of the several thousand things that Trevin does as part of his job here at Lifeway, and that is blogging. So talking about blogging in the context of leadership, what's the purpose of it? What is it? How is it helpful? How do you get started? Those kinds of things. That's what we are going to ask questions about today. So as our first question, but also just to kick off the conversation, Trevin, when did you start blogging and why did you start blogging?
To become famous?
Just kidding. No, for me, blogging and writing were always together. So I saw myself as a writer before I saw myself as a blogger. And blogging was just a way to get some of that writing out. And it was happening. So for me, I started kind of experimenting with stuff with blogging. It sounds like almost like a drug, right? Experimenting, starting to get into
psychotropic blogging.
Yeah, that's right. There are a few of those out there, though,
that
I'm sure.
Very true.
So for me, it started around 2003, 2004, started blogging just a little bit, seeing what the medium was like, the form was like. But I didn't start my current blog and start blogging daily until October of 2006.
Okay.
So almost 10 years.
Are you going to have a big anniversary celebration?
You know, blogging is so great. Immediate. Would I be the only person that would be interested in that? Probably. So,
yeah.
So but that's, probably but not.
That is one of the things that bloggers are known for, is celebrating themselves.
That's my question.
Okay, yeah. That's true. You can handle it. So you drew a distinction between blogging and writing, or not necessarily a distinction. You said you view yourself as one first, and then you started the other. What is that distinction? I mean, why? What is the significance of that?
Well, I mean, writing is, so if you look at it this way, writing is like the umbrella term for all sorts of other kinds of things. What different kinds of writings? Mm-hmm. And if you think of a blog, it's a particular genre of writing. It's a particular form, a type.
Is it a genre of writing, or is it a delivery method of any kind of writing?
You know, there's a debate about that. And there's a debate about what constitutes a blog, right? There was it seems like maybe 4 or 5 years ago, there was this big debate. Is a blog site that doesn't have comments truly a blog? You know, because at one point, the whole point of blogging seemed to be the immediate feedback and interaction that you would get from people who are reading you, right? So people would say, well, this is just a news site or just an articles hosting site if it's not. So there's all sorts of debates about what exactly is a blog and what exactly is a blog form. I don't know, maybe I should write about this. No, I haven't come to a complete understand. I think the term evolves and technology is helping shape how we discuss this. So I'm not sure there's a clear answer to that question.
Well, I mean, I think if you were going to, you think of a site like, say, I don't know, the New York Times website, things like that, that would pride themselves on being a journalistic website, and then you get a blog site, like you would call yourselves a blog site. I think one of them is, if you're going to try to draw the distinction, one would be more observation, opinion, commentary.
Sure.
That would be the blog. Journalism is going to be the news, the research, the story, all of those journalistic efforts. And journalists are usually or have been very, not defensive in a bad way, although some are, in drawing a distinction between the work that they do and somebody who's throwing opinions up online because they want to protect journalistic integrity. So I think, sure. I think that's a categorical difference.
Is blogging more informal or conversational in style?
It doesn't have to be. So, like, I mean, an op-ed, if you think about an op-ed on in a newspaper or on an online site like the New York Times, mm-hmm. an op-ed from a New York Times columnist is going to have a different amount of credibility and feel than it would be more formal, for example, than you're going to find on a lot of blog sites. But a lot of blogs are popular precisely because they sort of straddle that fence between I've got a formal opinion I want mm-hmm. to put out there, but then I'm also going to say this in informal, friendly, like it's a conversational tone yeah. kind of ways. So
I think blogs are usually personality driven. You know, they're not news driven. They're not research driven. They're not, they are personality driven. So you go to the blog of Trevin Wax because you want to hear Trevin's thoughts on a topic or something sure. along those lines. You know, you go to Kerry Newhoff's blog because you want Kerry's thoughts on this. I followed a similar track to you. I was just about 5 years later in terms of wanting an outlet for writing, and blog was the delivery method. And so it's funny as we talk through this because I've had some of those same thoughts as, you know, is this a longer form, you know, more researched, thought out piece. This is a straight up opinion piece. This is a humor piece. And some of those feel very bloggy. And if you're a reader of these things, you just sort of know, you're like, oh, that's a blog formula. There's a formula that works in blogging. Yeah. You know, it can be lists, it can be whatever. But if you're going to write 1,200 or 1,500 words where you're sort of reasoning out an argument, that feels more article
almost
than
like
blog.
An article, yes. Right? Yeah. But then you can post it on your blog.
Right.
But what's interesting is that in the past 5 years, things have shifted even more to where you go, instead of blog being the delivery method for your writing, now social media is the delivery method for your blog.
Right.
Right. So now it's Twitter, Facebook.
Which is why you brought up the comments thing earlier. So many blogs have sort of killed off comments, in part because people are often toxic and unkind,
sure.
but in part because most of that interaction now happens on social media,
not in the blog comments. People who might have not liked your title but never read your post. Right?
So that happens. Wait, on Facebook?
Now, really? There are three kinds of people that leave comments. And should we talk about blog commenters?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. No, let's go.
Some people go to a site. I call them like the Amen Corner. They go to the site and they are going to agree with just about virtually anything this person says. They go there to get their like daily dose of I like this person because he thinks like me.
We love these people.
We like the Amen Corner. And then you have the how dare you crowd. They come to the blog and it's like they know that they're not going to like what you say and they're just already resistant.
They're looking for an offense.
But then the worst mm-hmm. is the third. The you betrayed me corner. They went to your blog thinking that you were going to tell them something that made them feel good about themselves that they would like and agree with, and you actually had an opinion that differed from them, and then they're just like, they can't take it. They're just, it's like how you,
yeah.
I came here for you to tell me that I'm right about what I think about the world and you sucker punched me.
This may be stating the obvious, but if you're looking for civil discourse, blog comments are not where one should go to find that. They're a half step up from YouTube comments.
Wow.
Todd, aren't you have a second question?
Sure?
Absolutely. So yeah, that's maybe. Good then. That does lead into our second question. What are some of the misconceptions about blogging and bloggers?
Okay, the one I hated the most.
I think I know. I bet I know what this is.
You know what I'm going to say?
Okay, narcissistic.
No.
The one I hated the most when blogging first became a thing was you guys are just in your boxer shorts in your grandmother's basement.
Yes. Yeah. I knew it was I was going to say mom's basement.
Yeah,
yes.
Mom's basement. Yeah, well, maybe. There's the stereotype of millennials moving back in with
that's
mom
right.
and dad, right? That was it was the worst. So 10 years ago, that's what people were saying about bloggers, that basically, who are these people that are putting out these opinions and they're, you know, they're sort of out of the mainstream. We don't know who they are. They have these weird blog titles and they're just, you know, people living in the basement in their yeah. boxer shorts, just typing out their thoughts.
And I think much of that came from people who, because they were threatened, they wrote for newspapers, they wrote
right.
for prominent news websites. And now all of a sudden they were being encroached upon by people who were having an incredible amount of success getting traffic and getting shared online because they actually knew how to use the internet, unlike many newspaper writers.
And a lot of them had something good to say, substantive or interesting to say.
So I read a ton of sports stuff online. Most of it would be by people who are considered bloggers. That is a realm where this debate is still alive and well because traditional sports writers, specifically in baseball, because it is the slowest to change of all of the sports, this side of maybe tennis, they resent the fact that an individual can research, can have opinions, can go online and write an article that's better than the junk they write for a city's newspaper and get more traffic. And so they still hurl around that accusation of, you know, these the sweatpants in mom's basement eating Cheetos kind of thing.
And there are some of those out there. So, like, yeah. I mean, that's
they're exceptionally obvious now because the quality of writing. I mean,
that's right.
Huge numbers of prominent leaders maintain blogs. They're people who you respect in just about every other walk of life, and they blog, and that's just a normal thing now. And yet still, there's this subset of that misconception that exists. And it amuses me more than anything now. But there's so many bloggers who put a ton of thought and work and creativity into their writing, and so it's kind of water off a duck's back now, but that is one of the prominent, or has been one of the prominent ones, I think, for sure.
I think another one is people do assume that they're narcissists who are just trying to build their own platform or that this is all they do. So,
And the narcissism charge is probably accurate about most of our population. So I'm not sure that blogging is like the...
Yeah, bloggers are just louder about it, I guess.
But I mean, you do have to have, not narcissism, but some level of self-confidence to be able to say, I've got something that I want to say that I think is worth saying and possibly sharing out loud. Well, like, you've got that.
Yeah. Trevin, you and I read, along with a couple other folks here, William Zinsser's book on writing well.
That's right.
And he refers to writing as an act of ego.
Yeah.
And he's not saying that he's not making a moral statement at all, but there's an act of just sort of bold, I myself have a contribution to make that I think is worthy of other people's attention. And it is an act of sort of just boldness to put it out there. So I can see where people would see that potentially
negatively. Something bad.
I think that there are blogs that play into that because there are a lot of blogs that are like publishing your own journal. And so it's very navel-gazy and just sort of you're looking at your own life and your own everything. It's not so much a contribution as it is airing your laundry.
Yeah.
And that's a very different style. I think another misconception.
That's called counseling.
Exactly. It's just, journals should stay in journals. Close the cover, don't publish.
On your own, yeah.
I think another misconception, and I think this is one that I hear from people who are trying to get started, is that there is a right way to blog, a right style. And I don't hear it because they say, is there a right style? But they say, you know, should I do more of this or should I do more of this in terms of should I write in lists? Should I write long form? Should I write first person? Should I do...
And that all depends, doesn't
it?
Like,
exactly.
It really does depend on you, on the writer, on the audience. Like, it all depends.
And there are some people, so Chris Martin, who we've had on this podcast before, who works with you, Trevin, in actually helping people develop some of these. Chris is a proponent for many people getting started to find a niche.
Right.
Find kind of an area of things that people can come to you and say, oh, you know, Todd is the voice on leadership development. I don't do that when I write. I write on whatever interests me, but that's intentional. So it is an intentional direction. And I think, and so I'll write on sports, I'll write on parenting, I'll write on books, I'll write on whatever those things are that interest me. And I don't think Chris is wrong, and I don't think I am right. I think he's right, and I'm right,
but
for the strengths of the particular writer.
The key difference, though, between... So you and I can write on almost anything, and there's someone's going to be interested and read it. You know,
I
that's
hope so.
That's what we because we've been doing this for a while. We've been doing it for a while, and people, you know, you've got a built up following. It would be harder though today if I were to 10 years later if I were to start a blog today, and write the exact same things in the exact same way that I did 10 years ago. covering all the kinds of topics. Yeah. It would be harder for me to have carved out. That was still on the sort of the.
It was a golden era.
It was a golden era.
Trevin was almost an early adopter. He was on the. I mean, 10 years ago was like the prime time. It is like starting a podcast now, basically. It's rising in popularity, but there's still a lot of room. I came on a little bit later, but.
But today, to get started, it does seem like a lot of the blogs that I see that have grown in popularity just immediately tend to be from people who already have public platforms or personas elsewhere, mm-hmm. and they just have the blog now as a supplement to what they're already doing. Or it's someone who we don't know, but they found a niche. For example, mm-hmm. they're like, you know what? I'm going to do only local. I'm going to do a blog that is purely focused on pastoral ministry. Brian Croft, for example. Practical shepherding. The ins and outs of being a pastor. Okay. I mean, Brian could have started a blog and talked about anything and everything, but because he went so focused, he built a good following of people that appreciated that kind of counsel.
And he's very consistent in sticking with that. I mean, he doesn't go into theological debates and things, the things that pastors can expand into. He stays at the pastor's home, the pastor's pulpit, the pastor's study habits, the pastor's personal life, and those kinds of things. And that's why it's why he has a following and why it's beneficial.
Right.
Because he stays in a lane that he is very good at.
So it isn't a right or wrong thing. It's just the nature of blogging changes and keeps changing.
If you're trying to start a blog now, you have much more noise to overcome than you did 5 years ago and 10 years ago when I started and Trevin started respectively. So expertise or focus now helps because it's a much sort of more focused bright light that people can pick out and go, oh, that's a blog on this kind of parenting or this kind of leadership or whatever.
Yeah.
All right. Third question. This is a leadership podcast, so we want to turn this to the leadership bent and not just, you know, blogging in general. What are some of the main benefits of blogging for a leader?
I think one of the big ones is you are forced to articulate in as clear as possible a way in as compressed a space as you can.
This is the one question I could have answered.
Were you going to say the same thing?
Yeah, because it forces you to do one thing that leaders are supposed to do really well, which is communicate clearly.
That's right. Yeah.
If people will follow you if you're uncertain, they won't follow you if you're unclear. I think that was Stanley. But, you know,
he's trying to access the encyclopedia of leadership books that he's read.
I was going to say, I can hear it. Yeah, I can.
Did you hear the words?
I could hear the pages flipping in your mind.
But, you know, it allows you to reach part of your audience that may, you know, appreciate a different type of communication as well. Because not everybody wants to listen to you talk. Some people want to be able to, you know, to read what you have to say. And, you know, it often depends on which voice that you're blogging in as well.
There's one other one that came to mind, and you drew my attention to this, Todd, with how you have talked about how you tweet.
Yeah.
You use Twitter almost as an accountability system.
Yep.
If you tweet it, it's not saying I'm excellent at this and you should be too.
No.
It's saying I have a ways to go in this and I would like to work on it.
But these are the insights that I'm having about this.
Yeah, so these are things that I'm working on.
Yeah.
And a blog can be a similar kind of thing. You can just express it in more than 140 characters. So rather than saying, here's how we do this, you can say, here's the thing we are aspiring to. Here's what we're learning. And if you write it, you better do it. That is one of the things that I have learned about writing. So wrote a book about faith and doubt. It is an accountability system to me about faith because I wrote it, and so I have an obligation to live it. And blogging has a similar effect, just it's a little bit more temporal, but I think that's a great benefit for leaders because if you write about character and leadership and your leadership team looks at it and goes, I see none of that. I see none of that on a daily basis. You have some changes you need to make. So that accountability and sort of publicly putting it out there that this is a thing I ought to be doing is a real benefit to leaders, I think.
But I think the fact that you mentioned too that you're expecting the people that follow you to read it is so we've been talking about what's the benefit for the leader.
Yeah.
But one of the ways that a leader leads is by communicating. And when you communicate in this way, it not only helps sharpen your skills as a communicator, doesn't only help you keep you accountable, it also is another way for you to impact the people who are who are following you, who are reading you. And, you know, yeah. whether if you're a pastor in a church and you've got a blog, it's another touch point for you to be able to communicate to your congregation. If you're a leader in a business and your team is following something that you're writing, it holds you accountable, but it also is another way for your vision to seep in a little bit more in a different kind of form, a different kind of way.
And I think this is a personal, a personal example. One of the things that made me want to work at Lifeway was the online presence of Tom Rainer and Eric Geiger, amongst some others here, because I saw what they wrote about leadership, about organizations, about organizational culture, about ministry, about vision. And I thought, that sounds like the kind of organization I would like to be part of. It's also a reason I have visited various churches, you know, or when I've traveled or things like that, because I look at it and I go, that pastor sounds like somebody I would have great respect for. I'm going to go check that out. So blogging is a way to attract people to your organization, either to attend or as, you know, potential employees even, because it's an expression of organizational culture just inside out.
Yeah, and there's a platforming aspect of blogging too, which, I mean, in the worst cases, feeds into narcissism and people mm-hmm. just sort of platform building for platform building. But in the best case scenario, it can actually help get the word out about really good resources. I mean, I'd say for me, working on a curriculum like the Gospel Project, my blog has been part of what I've wanted to leverage and use to help get the word out about a resource that an incredible team here at Lifeway works on. So
yeah, it's a piece of the puzzle for leaders. I mean, I think there are people who, for example, if they want to get published, they want to be a published author, they think if they start a blog, get published. And it's not that. It is a piece of the whole. So we publish blog posts with every single one of these podcast episodes, which feeds into social media, which feeds back into both of them. And it's just a piece of what we do as part of Lifeway Leadership. So that, I think that's where blogs are now. They, once upon a time, they might have been the sole voice of particular people, but now they tend to be a piece of the whole. Yeah. There's a social media presence. There's an in-person presence, a speaking presence, a writing presence.
That's right.
Podcasting, whatever it is. And so, yeah, it's a catalyst for other things, and those things can feed back into the blog content as well.
All right, then. So what are some of your favorite blogs? What are ones you enjoy, or what are ones that are, you know, challenge you the most?
Well, I feel like I read different blogs for different reasons, right? So, for example, if I want to read a leadership blog, if I'm reading Eric Geiger's blog on leadership, and I mention him first because he's the easiest to digest, right?
And he's Boss Daddy.
And he's all of our boss. No, but seriously, like it's
but he's good.
No,
he's
really good.
I thought he was good really before good. I got a paycheck from Lifeway. So I still think he is.
Practical, really solid leadership with very solid theology. Yeah. What I think he does better than anybody is marry the practical and the theological.
No, he really does that well. There are other people that I follow, and it's not. And again, just talking about how blogging has changed, there are people that I read that I don't necessarily read their blog. I read their articles or their blog posts on a host of other websites. So mm-hmm. I think of someone like a Mike Cosper, a pastor. And writer who's really, really in just keen on cultural analysis and kind of helping us understand the moment that we live in. And so there are people like that. And then I wind up online often following a lot of the blogs of magazines that I read for a deeper dive. So yeah. I'm interested in questions of theology and public life. So I think of First Things. You know, I enjoy reading, seeing what conversations are going on there from a wide variety of people. I think the blogs that a lot of the articles and blogs that you find at like Christianity Today, the Gospel Coalition, it's a great day for good resources because there's plenty of it out there. It's trying to find the few voices or names that no matter what they write, it's like, I want to hear what they have to say.
What about you, Todd?
So for me, it's honestly more topical than mm-hmm. the person. So for a while I was into, John Berger, who, Contagious, wrote Contagious.
Jonah.
Is it Jonah?
I think it's Jonah.
It Berger?
Berger.
It is Jonah, and it's either Berger or Berger,
whatever. Yeah. I know I can spell his last.
B-E-R-G-E-R.
Yes.
Right. Okay. That's what I thought.
He wrote Contagious and he, you know, shook his fist at, Gladwell. and saying, oh, you got it all wrong in Tipping Point.
And you agreed with Jonah?
Whatever his name is, Berger. His book Contagious is really good.
But I've got five really good ones from Gladwell. So,
but I started out. Well, we could. There's one or two that I find I have struggles with. But anyway, going back to this, before the Contagious book came out, I had really started to get into his blog. And then when the book came out, I mean, I had it pre-ordered. I was ready to go.
Sure.
Only to find a lot of it was the same, which was, it was still really good.
You just got it in book form.
I just got it in long form. And so, for me,
it's a challenge for all of us bloggers who write.
It's going to be,
yes,
it's going to be like whatever I'm into now. And I do read a lot more articles than I do, anything else. So for me, it's, HBR, Mashable, and Forbes.
It's funny you say that. I mean, when you asked me the question,
which bloggers do I read,
in my own mind, I read a lot of online content.
Right.
Yes.
And I don't necessarily distinguish between a blogger that I follow and online content. I have a Feedly subscription.
Well, I do have RSS a secret, deep, dark confession, a dirty little secret.
Uh-oh.
I like Quora. I like to see what's trending there. And then
on what?
Quora.
I don't know what that is.
You don't know Quora?
This is your dark secret, not mine.
Quora?
Yeah.
Okay. I've heard of it.
So you can ask you basically can ask any question, and it's crowdsourcing of what, like basically what the answer is and what the, there's really good
answers there before. I wouldn't have thought of really it.
Good,
context.
Yeah. Really okay. good articles. Yeah, yeah. So the problem is it's for brain candy consumption, meaning, I want to read something, but I want to read something that is random and interesting versus I'm going to get,
you're being intentional about something,
which is, I don't get to do very often, but when I do, then it's like a rabbit hole because you'll find different articles that don't, are not even articles. It's just opinions that don't have anything. One does not have anything to do with the other. But you're usually getting, the best answers or the best, content because people are voting it up or down. So if you find something that's good, it's continually being voted up.
Okay. I have been to this site now.
Yeah.
Now that he says that, like, I'm like, okay.
One of the things that both of you mentioned without describing it is the idea of sort of blog communities, because more and more websites are collecting bloggers would you be a regular contributor to this? So I write for a site called The Blazing Center, and we have a small number of contributors. It's not a blog community, but there's maybe four or five of us who contribute regularly. Trevin, your blog is hosted on the Gospel Coalition site, and there's a larger number and, some larger names. And it's a blog community in the sense that everybody contributes their own stuff. There's not a lot of editorial oversight in the sense of control.
There's no editorial control, really.
You mean because you manage your own blog, you post your own stuff at your own schedule, as does Kevin DeYoung and Jared Wilson and Tabidi Anubuli and 15 or 20 other people,
which causes its own amount of leads to some complexities.
Yeah, because there's some conflicting opinions.
All the
things.
Bloggers don't always agree, and so you blog something at the Gospel Coalition, and suddenly you find on Twitter people are saying TGC says this, and it's like, well, no, one of the bloggers who is on the website said this, not necessarily. It's the position of the organization, but
and I would just simply say to people who are looking for content, those kinds of communities can be very beneficial because they tend to fall into kind of buckets of thought. Even if there's conflict or differences, they're usually whichever kind of governing body is hosting them is saying, these are people we promote to you for some reason. So that's a helpful thing. I get almost all my blog content through social links. Twitter and Facebook are where I find all my content. Twitter being
you don't
like
do an
90.
RSS reader anymore.
I used to, and it became entirely overwhelming because I was interested in so many different sites, but I was interested in each one so sparingly, like one out of 20 articles. Right. I don't want to go scroll through 20 articles to find the one. I'd rather see a tweet that says the article title or the intriguing question and go, oh, I'm gonna favorite that. I'm gonna go back to it later and read that. So. And yeah, like Todd said, it's much more topical. So there's baseball, there's football, there's leadership, there's literary criticism, there's current events, and depending on what's going on in the world. So as we're recording this right now, there's all sorts of strife, you know, with the shootings by police officers and the shootings of police officers. And there are a handful of writers who I go back to time and time and time again because I find them thoughtful and incisive and poignant. And on both sides of the aisle, whether, you know, or both, they would lean on both sides of that debate because I want to be aware of how people read this and see this and interpret this. But I won't read those guys about everything or those ladies about everything. This is a topic that I'm particularly interested in. So that tends to be how I consume it. All right. Fifth question. If someone wanted to start a blog, what are some practical starting steps to take? So yeah, they're at zero right now.
I get this question. I sit down with writers or people that want to write a lot. And they the first thing, I can count on one hand the amount of people that actually have done what I said, and it became a blog. Most of the time, when I say—
You're saying you give bad advice?
No. Yeah, it could be that. No, my main thing is—
I gave them like 72 steps, and they just quit at like number 20.
Only one out of 50 actually made any.
The main thing that I say is, okay— A lot of people think that they want to start a blog and they think it's easier. It looks easier than it is. And so I've said, you may want to write and contribute articles or ideas to different places, but if you want to blog regularly, like have a, you know, every day of the week or
put your name on
it. If you want to do that, then I suggest you make sure that you've got enough ideas to do that with. Yeah. So I usually say, get a bank of 20 blog posts. And have a full month ready to go before you launch a site, and then and then begin moving forward. And most people don't go through that initial step.
So maybe they write three and then start and then run out after two
weeks. And they might be three amazing posts that I would say, hey, pitch that at this place or this website or this art, you know, this magazine. But to do a blog, you have to be frequent. You have to be regular. You've got to have be able to have an output. You've got to read a lot. So you've got a lot of ideas that then you can
deal
with.
And you have to know what else is out there. So you're not just duplicating what everybody else writes.
One of the problems
with the blogosphere, which is not an actual thing, but it's a thing we all understand. You kind of know it when you see it, is the echo chamber aspect of it. The fact that, 32 people of the same genre, the same sort of cut of cloth just said the same thing about the same issue, whatever that issue may be. Right along line with what you just said, I would say count the cost.
Yeah.
And that means you sit down, you figure out, how much time is this going to take on a weekly basis? And set yourself a realistic schedule. If you think you have to post Monday through Friday every week, the cost of that is significantly higher than if you say, I'm going to be a Monday-Wednesday blogger or a Tuesday-Thursday blogger, which is a perfectly good way to do it. More content is better for following, but it may not be better for you as a writer. And then somewhere between those two is where you say, is it worth it or should I contribute elsewhere?
But regularity, like you're saying, is the key thing. Yeah. I mean, I just in the last August, I went from blogging daily to blogging three times, basically two articles a week and a links post.
Yeah.
So, and I mean, that's the first time. And I mean, after 9 years of blogging, I kind of made that switch. But and I haven't seen any decrease in traffic. I feel like my quality has even gotten better, but it's the frequency and the regularity that matters. It's not the amount of content that you're doing.
I think another thing we talked about this briefly earlier is the idea of a niche or a voice. You don't need to be a niche writer, but it definitely helps. You have your thing, but you need to have some sense of what are you going to do week in and week out. So, and if it's a variety, then plan your variety. So Wednesdays are book review days and Fridays are links post days and Mondays are commentary on social issues days or whatever, if you want a variety. Or you do the Eric Geiger thing and you go, I'm a leadership guy. You do the Tom Rainer thing where you say, I'm the practical church leadership guy. And so that's the drum that you beat. But if you just start saying, I want to write stuff, like stuff is about the best quality you're going to get out of your blog.
I think you're saying, so really to sum that up, we're saying intentionality and focus.
Yes.
Focus, yeah. Know exactly what it is that you're, yeah. What ocean are you swimming in on focus, mm-hmm. and intentionality, making sure that you actually are putting forth effort in that direction.
Yeah.
That this is how, you've got a plan. You're not just sort of winging it.
And one other very, very just nuts and bolts thing is find a good platform and get a good design. That's a little thing, but in the web world we live in, people have an expectation and aesthetic equals quality.
Well, think about a restaurant.
Yes.
You know, I mean, Chris Martin likes to use the example of restaurant. Like if you walk into a restaurant and the food can be amazing and the wait staff can be terrific, but if the building's falling apart and it looks greasy and grimy and terrible.
Then Chris and I would have completely opposite opinions on that.
You would say that actually makes it better?
The divier the joint, and if it's cash only, then the food is probably amazing.
Yeah,
that's
there could be that.
Now, there also might be food poisoning. You up the risk of these things, but it is a good example. I mean, the presentation matters, and so you know, use WordPress and find a good
clean,
yeah, just a clean, clean. A clean, simple format that highlights your content. Medium and Squarespace are both good platforms, and then if you need to pay money. A little bit of money up front for a really good design, which you can plug things into because, you know, WordPress has a bunch. So do these others. It's worth it.
It's not that expensive.
No, I mean,
either.
I think it's like $50 for a design that's usually that you can usually manipulate to your
that's
needs
decent,
pretty easily. It's
at
pretty
least
clean,
nice.
Pretty
yeah.
solid.
And when people don't do that, it really because it is so easy to get a good design nowadays, it really communicates something when you don't have one.
Not to mention buying a domain. You know, buy your own domain. So your name or whatever you want it to
that's
be, or the closest you can
too.
Get.
Yeah.
It always strikes me when there's a blogger who still has like something.wordpress.com.
Yeah.
I'm like, why didn't you just buy your name? Or like the name of your blog, just go for that. Those are just little things that, again, it's just sort of, it completes the image. It's like having good signage at a church. If it's there, it really helps people. If it's not there, people get really confused and they notice, and it lowers the impression of things. Todd has not started blogging yet, but with a little bit more verbal abuse and encouragement.
Periodically and usually not on my own. Platform.
But again, that's also a very valid way to do it. As Trevin said earlier, maybe you don't need to have toddadkins.com and host it, but if you write twice a week for the Lifeway Leadership blog, which is lifeway.com/leadership, go check it out. That is blogging. That is it is a great contribution as a leader. It benefits the platform, it benefits the brand, it benefits you, benefits the reader. It's kind of all of the things one would hope for, and you don't necessarily have to go through the trouble of hosting and all of those things. So just wanted to highlight that for listeners. The ways that you can go about doing this are many and varied, and one is not necessarily better than the others. Any closing thoughts on blogging, gentlemen?
It's a lot of hard work, but it's worth it if you find like it fits into your overall leadership strategy.
If you don't love it, don't do it.
Not everyone needs to do it. That's true.
And I think if you're trying to use it for another means, you will put out lame content and you will lose the love for it. So don't do that. Only do it if you really enjoy it.
The love for you too.
That's true.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think and hope that was a beneficial conversation. If not, I enjoyed it. And so there's always that.
There's that.
Listeners, hope you enjoyed it as well. Thanks so much for tuning in. We would appreciate it if you jumped on iTunes, left us a rating and review there. We know that Apple's system of doing this is a bit of a pain, so if you would juggle through that process, we would really appreciate it. If you have any questions, topic suggestions, anything for us, hit us up on Twitter at Todd Adkins, at Barnabas Piper, or at Lifeway Lead, and then just use the hashtag 5LQ. On your tweet, and we see those, and we'll take a look at those, and would love to field some of those questions and get some of those topics. We'd love to interact with you. Thanks so much for listening, and tune in next time.
Don't forget to check out Southeastern Seminary's numerous education and training opportunities to help you grow in ministry. Visit sebts.edu/5LQ to learn more. That's sebts.edu/5LQ.